Hi everyone, my name's Susan, I'm an alcoholic. It's good to be here tonight with you. I told Sharon I was speaking tonight. She goes, oh, you're going to do the Easter sermon for Sunday nighters. Yeah, that's right. So I came to the step meeting before and we did step 11, which is sort of the perfect step to do on a holiday like this. So I'm kind of primed up for it. And I've shared at this meeting before. It's a meeting that I've gone to often, especially in my early sobriety. I went to a lot of downtown meetings, Monday Central, Sunday Nighters, Friday Central. And then my home group at that time at the beginning was Live and Let Live. And they met twice a week. And that was a great, great meeting for me. But I'll get to that later. I'll just kind of go back. And the tradition when we get up and share is to sort of say, you know, what happened to us, you know, what it was like, and what happened, and, you know, what it's like now. So I grew up in a home with two alcoholics. Actually, I should only say one. I don't know about my mother. She never confessed to being an alcoholic, so I'm not going to put that label on her. But they both were drunk quite often. And so I, you know, right from the beginning, there was a lot of fear and then anger and resentment and just all kind of chaos and craziness. And I learned pretty early that I had to take care of myself and I better get smart about life. And I had to take care of my parents a lot to keep them from literally sometimes killing themselves. And you know, I had to call ambulances and police and all that sort of thing. So it was a pretty wild childhood. And I got out of the house in my teen years, and then I went back, and then I got out again. And I stayed pretty a little bit too close to my family, I think. I could have gotten away further away. And then finally I did. I left Montreal and I moved to Vancouver. I took the train, and in those days, it was in the 70s, late 70s, and the train was a great experience. You could do cross-country, and it was a lot of fun. There was partying and a lot of drinking. And I had my first drink of alcohol when I was two. My parents were drinking, and they had a bottle of wine, and they didn't finish it, and they sort of fell asleep or passed out or whatever it was they did, and they left some at wine in the bottle, and I went over to it and I drank it. And my mother sort of woke up and realized and laughed and thought it was very cute that I was drunk. And I got into my little baby carriage at that time, and I sort of like started pushing it, and I pushed it down a flight of stairs, and I got a bloody nose. And so that was sort of my first drunk driving. And after that, I sort of gave it up for a while. And I sort of, you know, when I first came into AA, I had forgotten about my teenage drinking, and I was reminded of it when I went to a meeting and I heard a speaker. This is the great thing. You go to meetings and people will remind you of certain things about your past that you sort of blanked out on and you forgot. And then I just remembered, oh yeah, I used to drink in that place. And it was a place in Park X. I think it was owned by the mafia or something. We could get in if we were underage, and I used to drink in there. I think it was called Caesar's Palace or something. And I remember sort of going to parties and drinking, and but I was really trying to control it. Like, I didn't want to be like my parents, so I thought I wasn't drinking, and consequently I sort of blanked it out, and I just sort of said, oh yeah, I didn't drink. You know, I sort of started doing drugs in the 70s with everybody else. And but when I look back on it, I was drinking and I was getting drunk. And then I kind of got away from it a little bit, and I kind of went into drugs a little bit more. And I think that was really a rebellion against my parents. And I tried to get my act together in my early 20s. I got involved in yoga, and I got a teacher, and I community, and I sort of felt good there because it represented for me like a family. And I hadn't really had that. So that felt like a thing that I wanted to do and needed to do. And it just sort of felt good. And, you know, when I was there, I really did clean up my act quite a bit. And I got fairly healthy in a way, except that emotionally I was still a mess. Like but I knew it, but I was faking it, and you know, I was sort of hiding it. And but I knew inside that I, you know, I really basically what I was is like an unrecovered child of an alcoholic, and an alcoholic, but hadn't really bloomed yet into my full range. So. And something about getting well in that community and, you know, doing the hatha yoga and doing the meditation, it's like I couldn't stand feeling good. Like, it was too, I don't know. And the other thing was when I think about it now, like, I couldn't stand receiving love. I really didn't know how to do that very well. And these people were, for the most part, a lot of them were really kind of healthy and sort of normal, or so I thought. I'm sure they weren't. But, and it was very, very, it made me feel uncomfortable to be in a kind of a community where people didn't fight or drink or get drunk or, you know, hurt each other. And I didn't realize at the time what all that was about, but it made me kind of nervous. And soon after that, I started seeking out the company of in circumstances where I was going back to what was familiar. So I went back into drinking. I started to drink at that point, and drugging again. And just back into a feeling of chaos again, because that felt familiar and comfortable. And at some point, my parents' drinking was escalating quite a bit. And I was starting to take off on my little career of drinking. And I decided I had to get out of Montreal because I couldn't stand watching what my parents were doing to themselves and to each other. And I got on the train with a couple of my friends and we went to Vancouver and we settled there. And I think about 3 weeks after we got there, I got on a train and I went to Florida. And then I got on a train and went back to Vancouver. So I was doing a lot of train riding. And I realized now that I was just really uncomfortable. And I went back to Vancouver and lived there. And that's when my drinking really took off. I was doing some dance at that time. I was in a lot of workshops and got into a little company and... But just as I was about to maybe do something with that, I couldn't handle it because it was the feeling that I might be successful at something and actually enjoy something. So what I did was I sabotaged myself and I just started to drink again. And I went to a lot of bars in Vancouver, a lot of parties, and I think I was just trying to really drown out everything that was not okay in my life through drinking, and it worked for quite a while. And then at some point it stopped working, like it wasn't doing what it used to do anymore, and I was getting depressed, and also, you know, I was getting older. So I think what happened was that a lot of the stuff that I'd shoved down was coming up. And I couldn't deny it anymore, and I couldn't repress it, and I couldn't drink it away, and I had to look at myself and what was going on. And I tried going back to school, and I did fairly well, but I sort of got to the end, and then I wouldn't finish. You know, I would finish everything except one course, so I would get like a incomplete, and it, you know, just that whole thing again of not wanting to succeed, and you know, I'd almost succeed, and I, you know, and I knew I was intelligent enough to be able to succeed, but it was always that thing of not letting myself succeed. So while I was there, I decided It's so funny. Just a few years ago, someone sent me back all these letters that I had sent to them because they had moved away from Vancouver to Toronto, and we were writing letters back and forth. And she sent me a whole bunch of letters, and in the letters, I'm seeing almost every letter, I'm saying, I have to quit drinking. You know, I'm really, you know, my drinking is really getting, you know, it's really getting to me. I really don't feel well. And I was amazed when I read that, how much I was writing about that. And, you know, it was really on my mind to quit, but I couldn't. And what happened was my dad died. He had a heart attack. So I got a phone call and I had to go back to Montreal. And it's funny, but about a few months before he died, I did quit drinking, and I joined a group of women who were also trying not to drink. And one of them had taken me to an AA meeting in Vancouver. And I don't remember very much about it. I just remember there was a lot of smoke in the room, and that I thought it was kind of interesting, and, you know, and I was kind of glad to be there, but it was kind of frightening. And then I got involved in this other group, and I'm really, really glad, though, that I did that first meeting in Vancouver, because I don't think I would have been able to come back to AA here in Montreal after I moved back, because I would have been too afraid to have come to a meeting. And it's interesting how people get here. I mean, everybody has their own story of how you get to your first meeting, or, you know. And when I came back to Montreal, I was really, really a mess. I was just completely a mess. I couldn't work at that point. I was very kind of depressed. My self-esteem was terrible. I just felt like my life was just not working out. And my father had just died, and my mother was a mess, because she sort of had depended upon him to just do, you know, take care of her, like shopping and food shopping and whatever. And she sort of couldn't, she had kind of gotten to a place where she couldn't go out of the house. She was, I guess because there had been a lot of, like, violence and stuff, like, she just sort of, her self-esteem had gotten so low that she sort of couldn't take care of herself anymore. And so I lived with her for 5 years, and then she died. And in that time, I started coming to meetings. I called AA, and somebody met me. It was a Saint Laurent meeting. I went to the meeting, and I was terrified of it, because it was just too much. But I kind of stopped going after that, and then I tried another meeting. And then there was a conference, and I went to the conference, and I went to some meetings there, and that's when I found Live and Let Live. And I used to go to that meeting every week, twice a week, Tuesdays and Thursdays. And it was a very good group. It had good sobriety, and it kind of covered everything, because there was a speaker meeting once a month, and the rest of that Tuesday night meetings were discussion, and then on Thursdays we did the big book, and then we did the steps when we finished the big book. So I kind of got everything, and I got a sponsor, and I just decided to do it, you know, do what they were telling me to do. I didn't believe in God much at that point anymore. I was just so messed up in my mind. I couldn't figure it out. So I said, you know what? I'm just not going to even think about it. I'm just going to take the group as my higher power. I like this group. These people feel good. They're, you know, I feel connected here, and I'm just going to listen to what people tell me to do. And that really worked for me. And you know, they just said, "You think you can make coffee?" So I said, "Well, I'm not alone. Can somebody help me?" And so somebody helped me. And then a little time went on, and they asked me, you know, I had 6 months, came along, they asked me if I could chair, you know, a meeting, and that seemed like, oh my God, I'll never be able to do that. And then, so I stumbled my way through that, and, you know, just slowly, little by little, I started to feel more comfortable and I was able to do things. And I remember at the beginning of that meeting, we used to go around the table to, we had to read one of the books, either Big Book or The Steps, and I marveled that people could read. They could put thoughts together and they had ideas and opinions about what we had just read and they could remember what we just read. And then it would get to me and I would try and I couldn't read. I would read a line and start crying or something. Oh God, how embarrassing. But nobody seemed to think it was terrible. And it worked out. I just kept coming to meetings and then I would go to, when I wasn't going to those meetings, I would go to downtown meetings and I liked those. Those were kind of fun. There was always something going on at a meeting downtown. And it really worked out for me. I mean, it wasn't easy. I had a lot of times when I wanted to drink. Luckily, I sort of made friends with people in that group. So we would go out after the meeting, and we would go to the restaurant, and we would talk and hang out a little bit. And that was very, very helpful, because I got a sense of community from that. And, I really remember my first and second year. It was an amazing time, and when you're coming in that first year, because that's where you make some real deep connections with people. And and it was hard for me because I'd really gotten myself into a place of isolation in the drinking, and and I remember someone saying in that first meeting that it's a disease of loneliness, and it's true. I mean, alcohol just takes everything away. It takes away your confidence. It just takes you away from life. It just kind of sucks the life out of you. And the weird thing is, being an alcoholic, I have an alcoholic mind, and I go into denial about everything. It's like I just don't realize what's happening. Like I don't realize I'm, like even in sobriety, like I'll stay home and start watching TV or something instead of going to a meeting. And after, a while, I wonder why I'm not feeling that good and why I feel so lonely. And it's like, well, yeah, you're lonely because you're staying alone at home and you're not, you're not connected. It's like not that hard to figure out. And and then I'll be really happy someone will call me and say, do you want to speak at a meeting? It's like, yay, get out of the house. And I didn't always say yay when somebody asked me to speak at a meeting. It's like, oh no, the dread. But and a lot of things have happened in AA. I mean, I've had amazing moments, good moments, and then horrible things have happened, and you have to go through it sober, and you don't know how you're going to do it. Like somebody in your family dies, or a relationship breaks up, or you lose a job, or it could be anything, or illness, and I've always found there's always just been people there to talk to, and we help each other. We just help each other out. I remember one time I was breaking up in this relationship, and I was so upset. I thought it was the end of the world. And I walked, all the way over the mountain, and I walked to a meeting in, West End of Montreal, and I just walked and walked and walked. And I remember walking into the meeting, and Audrey was there, and then she just, put her arms around me and just, she didn't know what was going on, but she knew it was a mess. And she just, she was there for me, and it was like, wow, it's like, that's the miracle of this program. And last week I went to a meeting on Friday night, North End, because somebody announced it, the secretary announced that that meeting had changed. It was no longer a speaker meeting, and it turned into a discussion meeting. And I thought, oh, I'm going to go. And Friday night came along, and I was about to sit down and watch TV. I got up and went to the meeting. Because it's not far from my house, I can sort of walk there. And it was really good because it was a very small meeting. There's only about 7 or 8 people, and there was only one other woman there. And she had one week of sobriety, and she was kind of in a, I could tell she wasn't doing too well. And I, you know, it's so nice after to just go up and, you know, shake her hand and give her my number, you know, just say, here's my number, call me. But then when I left, I realized I should have taken her number. You know, she's probably not going to call me. But maybe she will. And she had another number in her book. So I, you know, and then I just sort of prayed for her the next day. And I thought, wow, I haven't done this in ages. I prayed for somebody, you know. And it's like, you know, I've sort of been thinking about her. Like, I hope she makes it. I hope she gets to another meeting. I hope she starts to, you know, just trust in this a little bit. Because it's really hard at the beginning. I mean, I just kept going because I didn't have anything else to do, basically. I couldn't work. I just was so lonely, and I just said, I'm just going to keep going to meetings. And I, you know, it was a kind of entertainment, too. Like, there was always something going on, and when the speaker shared, I really, you know, sometimes you would cry, and, you know, or you'd laugh, or it was just, it was always a good experience, no matter what. And, you know, I've seen some horrible things in AA, people fighting, and just all kinds of strange things going on, but I must say, tonight it feels wonderful in here. It's so peaceful. It's like, it feels like an Easter Sunday. And I don't know, I've it's been so interesting to work the steps. One of the good things when I first came in was I got a few buddies in the program. So I'd go to their house or they'd come to my house and we would actually like sit down and read the step together and talk about it. And it seemed so strange. I mean, like, what a thing to be doing, you know, for an alcoholic to, like, actually want to sit down and read this stuff and think about it. But I also remember how amazing it was reading the literature and, you know, reading the big book. And I still remember I got my first big book and I went home, and this was right at the beginning of my sobriety, and I couldn't sleep at night at all. And what I used to do is I took my big book and I had a pink marker and I just used to underline, like, just underline, you know, until I fell asleep. So, like, I have this big book at home that's just all pink. It's a pink book. And sometimes I'll pick it up and I'll look at it and I'll go, wow, you know, like, that helped me with my insomnia. You know, I didn't understand a thing. I was just, like, reading and underlining and then I just, like, fall asleep. But... anyway, there's all kinds of ways that this program works. So, let's see what time it is. Oh, early. Still. I just joined this meeting, the first meeting, about a month ago, because I needed a home group again. I used to be with the Saturday afternoon group, but I had to work on Saturdays and sometimes had to go out of town, so I kind of couldn't go to that meeting anymore. And that was a great meeting. I learned a lot in that, the Joe and Charlie tapes. And if you haven't done, you know, big book group, it's a good idea. It's a really good way to get to know what's in the big book. And, you know, step meeting, big book, discussion. I tried to, like, sort of scramble it a little bit and get a little bit of everything. And I suppose it doesn't matter. I mean, just go to a meeting if you're new. And I guess the other thing is try to reach out and get a number. I mean, I had a really hard time with that when I first came in because I didn't trust anybody and I was too afraid and I don't know. I was just too weird to be able to really reach out to anybody. But people did reach out to me, which was, you know, that's the magic of it. And people actually took my number, which was a good idea because I didn't call anybody. But then finally, I did get a sponsor who started to kind of let me know how it really works. You know, like if you take people's numbers, you call them. And, you know, if you're helping somebody, you know, you help them. And I don't know really what else to say. I just, you know, today I'm so grateful to be still part of AA. I love coming to meetings still. And I've gone through a lot of ups and downs with AA. Like sometimes I've really kind of let go of it a little bit, you know, where I would be doing one meeting a week. And then sometimes I'd even slide into not doing meetings for a while. And whenever I did that, I always started feeling really bad. I would get emotionally out of balance, feeling sorry for myself, I just depressed, all kinds of stuff. And it just, you know, I start to realize, like, if I go to meetings and if I do what I'm supposed to do, it does work. You know, it really does. And it doesn't mean that even in that time I won't get into a very strange space of being rebellious or just feeling sick and not being able to do it. But even in those times, there's always been things like I'd be walking around somewhere and I'll meet a member. And then they'll start talking. And so the connection, always that link is always continuing. And, you know, I've seen a lot of people go out. And it's very sad. But, you know, we never know what God's will is for someone. And that's what we were reading tonight in the 11th step. It really jumped out at me where it just said, you know, when we pray for others, sometimes we're just injecting our own agenda, what we think someone should do, but we always should put at the end, if it be thy will, because we never know what God's will is for someone. So that's an important thing for me to learn too, because I continuously get caught up in my own ego, thinking that what I want or what I'm thinking is, you know, the way it should be. Anyway, I've kind of rambled tonight for the rambly sermon. And I'm really glad to be here, and there's, you know, a lot of people in the room that I've seen over the years, and I'm so glad to still see you here, and there's newcomers, and I hope that you'll get everything you possibly can out of the meeting, and keep coming back, and thank you for asking. Sure.